An absolute ton going on in the world of college football. Several breaking stories over the weekend. We will get to all of those and more. I'm Chris Thomas tonight with you until 10 o'clock as we head out to the Wade4.com hotline. Welcome in our good buddy Ian Valentino. Make sure you check out his work at A2Z Sports. All right, Ian, you know the term, explain it to me like I'm five. I need you to help me do that with this whole Michigan. He's going to serve two games this year, Sean Moore, one game next year, $20 million fine. What is going on in Ann Arbor?
Yeah, we saw a dawn of a new age with punishments. And I think some of it was that Michigan had already purged a lot of the people that were responsible, or at least like the main culprits in what happened. And I think there's been a little bit of damage control that's come out since then. For them to point toward some of the punishment guidelines. You know, they don't want to repeat what happened in the past where they basically at Ohio State, you know, put them in a position where players traded memorabilia they had earned for tattoos, and it basically destroyed the program for a year or two and led to Jim Tressel's firing. And I think looking back through the years, like a lot of those other punishments, they looked at those and say, look, why are we looking at these other current student-athletes and future student-athletes and punishing them for the sins of a regime that's no longer even there? So that's hard. You know, it's a slippery slope. Do I think that they maybe should have vacated wins? I don't think so. I don't know what good that does. We saw the games play out. But is there something that they could have done moving forward that was a little bit more powerful than just saying, hey, if you get fired, you can't have another job for a year? Like, I don't see the purpose in that either. So they really gave a slap on the wrist, and, you know, it didn't take long for the Big Ten to try to move on and leaked this story about trying to get to like 28 teams in the playoff, which is insane. So I just think if you can buy a championship for $20, $30 million, then it's pretty good business.
Yeah, we'll get to that expansion story in just a second. Ohio State, you mentioned, though, did name their starter Julian Sain. Any shock there? I would assume not.
No, I don't think so. I do think Lincoln Kienholz, the other option. I think he gave a really good fight, but you're talking about like a high five-star rated guy who has, by all accounts, you know, a terrific arm compared to a guy who, you know, grew up in South Dakota, wasn't necessarily in like the highest level of competition. It's not that he couldn't be a really good quarterback. I think Ohio State would have kept that battle going if they could have, but, you know, they're 2 weeks out. So at some point you have to make the call. I think Ryan Day is banking on the talent of Sain and a little bit of the pedigree.
Is there enough weapons around him? I know, obviously, the wide receiver room sort of speaks for itself, but collectively speaking, does he have enough to work with?
Yeah, I think so. I think the offensive line is looking better than what they expected. They took a couple transfers in. I think one of the transfers is one of the best-rated tackles in the nation from Rice, who played really well last year against Texas, Ethan Onyewanwa. He, I think, is going to be on the bench to start the season. I think that one of the kids that they took from Minnesota to be their right tackle, I think he's going to win the job over him. And so that's a good position of strength to have extra offensive linemen. Tight end position, they might have the best tight end in the country, Max Clair. Running back room is very young outside of C.J. Donaldson, who came over from West Virginia. But the Buckeyes continue to reload, whether it's between the transfer portal or just hitting on these recruits. They look pretty loaded. It's going to be a lot to make up for with the new offensive coordinator, too.
Real quick in the pros, Travion Henderson and Quinshon Judkins are both getting a shot this season. Judkins obviously had some off-the-field stuff to deal with, but seems like he's ready to go now. Do you think either of those guys has a real, like, true RB1 potential in the NFL?
I think Henderson does in a little bit of a non-traditional role. I think he might just be a guy who's super efficient, almost like a Jahmyr Gibbs, where he's like a 1A, 1B situation, where he's clearly the better talent, but you're not going to run him between the tackles 15, 20 times a game. You're going to do some special stuff with him to give him a runway because he's battled some injuries. I think Quinshon, I think he's a good player too. I think he could be a good running back. Is he going to be a standout guy? I don't know that he's a standout guy. I think he's someone that you're pretty happy with for the duration of his rookie contract if he can, you know, get that hammered out, and maybe, you know, one more contract after that. But I don't think he's someone that's overly too much of a difference maker. He's solid, but not spectacular.
Talking all things college football with our buddy Ian Valentino. Make sure you check out his work at A to Z Sports. You mentioned the Big Ten and this latest proposal. Is this the closest thing to a super conference proposal we've seen?
I think so. It's definitely the biggest one I've seen yet. It's the most out there. So I'm wondering if they're floating it out there to kind of set expectations, you know, crazy high. And then if they kind of meet in the middle, they're pretty happy with that. But they're following the money. I don't even know the purpose of the conferences at that point. Like, just have it be an open field and just be Wild West independent, and everyone gets an automatic bid if you make a certain amount of money per year. Like, it's really hard to parse through this and see, like, the business side of it and think that this is good for fans. So, I don't know. It's getting crazy, though.
All right. So, speaking of crazy, Sooner Magic Memories is offering fans the opportunity to sit in post-game press conferences this season. And they've listed some pricing tiers, Ian. Oklahoma-Michigan non-conference showdown get-in price is $692.11. For Auburn, it's $575. What in the heck is going on with this?
You know, maybe if it was like Ole Miss with Lane Kiffin, where you're going to get a quote that's just some gold, maybe you could justify like $20. I would want to be paid $500-$600 to sit through some of these post-game press conferences. I've been there. I've been in that room before. There's nothing special about that room. A lot of the times it's even streamed online, so you don't have to be there. Interesting model. If it works for them, a lot of credit, but I really don't see the appeal. And if you're a fan thinking about it, I can just tell you that from my seat, I've never really found anything that interesting in those post-game conference press conferences.
Will they be allowed to ask questions? I would assume not.
I mean, for the price, like, how do you not, though? Like, you should get one free question, and it, like, has to be answered. If you can get that from, like, Deion Sanders or someone, or just one of these coaches, and, like, they have to answer it, then okay. Then you might actually convince me that that might be worth it for somebody. But anything short of that is pretty ludicrous, and I can't imagine that the coach would ever agree to that.
Yeah, and fans are going to be shocked at some of the sizes of these media rooms across the country, because I know that some of them are small in the NFL, Ian, so forget about it in college. Notre Dame quarterback battle, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I like C.J. Carr here. I think that kind of goes back to like the Ohio State idea of, we have the infrastructure around them, we have the coaching, we have the pedigree to where if he makes a couple mistakes, has a couple bad games, we should be able to survive that, still get into the playoff. Their schedule doesn't look too terribly hard either, and I think Carr, the word out on him has been very positive since he even committed there. I mean, that's always going to be the case, but I do think that that's where I would probably lean toward. Let the young guy struggle a little bit, and if he doesn't settle within the first couple of games, then maybe you turn the page and try to come back to him later.
There's a lot of hype here locally in the flats about Tech and what they could do this season. Do you like them in the game against Colorado to open the season?
Yeah, I would probably pick them. I think Colorado is a solid team. I actually think they're probably maybe a little bit undervalued overall. Obviously, they lose Shador. They lose Travis Hunter. You're not going to replace those guys. But what you are going to do is you're going to see a little bit more of a more well-rounded team. They've done really good at actually building out that roster. They've built more depth on both sides of the ball. Like, it's not the same team that it was when Deion took over, and they deserve a lot of credit for that. But at the same time, I think Georgia Tech is just going to be more athletic. I think they're going to be more physical. I think the depth is there. I'm buying the trajectory of this team, and I think the quarterback play should be significantly better than what we've seen in recent years. So I'm looking at them with a lot of interest this year. I think they're potentially a sleeper, maybe, you know, I don't know if I want to talk playoff, but I definitely want to talk double digits. Can they get to that level if everything goes well? Well, I don't think I'd be too shocked about that.
Who has more to lose in week one, Clemson or LSU?
I think it has to be LSU. I think, you know, when you're Dabo, like, you've got a track record of bouncing back, enduring, all of these things that you need to see from a championship caliber program. It's still a young team that should be blossoming at the right time. But to me, LSU, it's not only just LSU's own demons that they've had in these games, but then they have to go. They have a really tough schedule. They're going to have a lot of showdowns that last year they failed. At key points of the season that they can't afford to do that. This is a Brian Kelly thing, though, too, where he's got to show it. And he's got to do it against other elite coaches to kind of, I think, get the faith back into him a little bit. It's going to be a close game. It should be a great, fun offensive game, but I think LSU, because their defense was so bad last year, they have to come out and show that they've actually made progress. And this isn't just a team that's almost more like a Big 12 team in how they play.
Who do you think has more on the line early on in the season, sort of the same deal, Oregon or Ohio State with their big matchup week one?
I think Oregon. I think Ohio State's going to be afforded a lot of grace. And their schedule is pretty favorable, too. I haven't heard anything about Oregon all offseason. No one's talking about Oregon. I think they're looking at the move to Dante Moore at quarterback. You lose Dylan Gabriel after you lost Bo Nix and, you know, Justin Herbert. They've had a long lineage here of quarterbacks that worked out really well. But the last time we saw Dante Moore, he was terrible at UCLA. He got benched out there with Chip Kelly, and that was a bad team. Like that, I don't think that was necessarily on Moore, but he looked bad. So they didn't bring any competition in. They tried to bring in a five-star quarterback. He ended up going to Cal. He won that starting job today as a freshman, which is huge. But I think for Oregon, there's a lot on the line for making that decision. Like, this is where Dan Lanning, you kind of got to show it. Last year was a huge breakout year, only undefeated team all season. Now you got to prove that that wasn't a fluke and that you're not just reliant on Nike money now that everyone else has kind of caught up to them a little bit. So Ohio State, I think, you know, they're turning over, like you said, like 15 starters or something. Like, if they have a bad year this year, they're kind of in a grace period where it's like, as long as they beat Michigan, I don't think anyone really cares.
Before I let you go, what's the latest you're hearing on DJ Lagway? Is he going to be okay?
I think he will be. You know, things are always close to the chest, right? Like, you never want to spook a fan base and get them riled up. And, you know, Billy Napier, we know what's on the line for him this year. I think that whole program right now is really, they need it. They need Lagway to be out there and be a star. There's a lot of recruits that want to come play with him. He's got a very unique draw to him, understandably. Florida's waiting to be that powerhouse, but one injury like that can break it all, which is a little bit scary and a little bit unique. A lot of programs aren't in that situation. So I think I hope he'll be okay. The only things I've really heard is more optimistic than not, but it's getting down to it. And I hope that we start to actually see it and get some positive reports going.
Ian, appreciate the time. As always, we'll chat soon and we'll check you out at A to Z Sports. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
All right. That is Ian Valentino, our good buddy there. When we get back, let's keep the college football conversation rolling, but let's talk some dogs. Connor Riley joined our buddies Dukes and Bell earlier in the day. They had their second scrimmage this weekend. Who's looking good? Who's not? And everything in between that's coming your way to kick off the 8 o'clock hour. Chris Thomas tonight with you till 10.